Jason Derek Brown, handsome, French-speaking, with a master's in international business, should have been a poster child for success. Instead, he became one of America's most notorious fugitives. In a flash, a suburban Mormon missionary turned suave conman allegedly gunned down an armored car guard outside a Phoenix movie theater in 2004. He escaped on a bicycle, blending effortlessly into crowds, leaving only whispers and questions. Who was Jason Derek Brown? A charming seducer, a broke scam artist, or a cold-blooded killer on a thrill ride? His trial in the media, despite never being captured, has sparked fascination and fear. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. The Setup. The Smiling Fugitive. Jason Derek Brown looked like the kind of guy you'd trust with your wallet, your daughter, or even your life. Blonde hair, athletic frame, perfect teeth, a perpetual tan from years of sun-drenched leisure, surfing in Southern California, snowboarding in Utah, sipping cocktails in Las Vegas. He wasn't just charming, he was magnetic, fluent in French, a master's degree in international business, former Mormon missionary. If you didn't look too closely, he seemed like a poster child for the American dream. But beneath the smile was a trail of fraud, debt, and deception so deep, it would one day land him on the FBI's 10 most wanted list for murder and armed robbery. Born on July 1, 1969 in Los Angeles, Jason grew up in the affluent coastal town of Laguna Beach. His early years were filled with the trappings of privilege: beach bikes, family barbecues, and weekends at Disneyland. But his family wasn't as polished as it looked. His father was a con man who eventually vanished, leaving behind a legacy of manipulation and debt. That absence would come to define Jason's path. By his late teens, Jason had joined the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and was sent on a mission to Paris, France. There, he polished his language skills, wooed strangers on the street with a slick mix of scripture and charm, and learned how to slip in and out of conversations and situations without ever getting pinned down. After his return to the U.S., Jason earned a master's degree in international business and started several small businesses in Utah and California, a toy import company, a door-to-door advertising venture, and a few vague investment schemes. But none of them truly took off. He lived like a millionaire, but behind the expensive clothes and flashy toys, BMWs, boats, snowmobiles, was a mountain of credit card debt and IOUs. By the early 2000s, Jason was running out of rope. He was defaulting on loans, his businesses were collapsing, and friends noticed he always had a new excuse when the rent was due. One friend said Jason would charm his way into money and out of responsibility. Another claimed he was the best liar they ever met. Then something shifted. In November 2004, Jason purchased a .45-caliber Glock pistol from a gun store in Salt Lake City. He even took a concealed carry class and left fingerprints on official forms. At the time, no one thought much of it. But in hindsight, it was the first concrete move in a carefully calculated plan. At the same time, he began asking questions, odd ones. How much does an armored car guard make? Do they wear bulletproof vests? When do they make cash drops? Around this time, he also rented a storage unit in Phoenix, Arizona, far from his home in Salt Lake City. It was a unit later found to contain ammunition, gloves, and a bike. No ordinary mountain bike, but a modified getaway vehicle, stripped down, oiled up, with treadless tires and no serial number. On the morning of November 29, 2004, 24-year-old Robert Keith Palomares, a father and armored car guard for Loomis, made a routine stop at the AMC Theater in Ahwatukee, a quiet suburb of Phoenix. It was supposed to be an easy drop. Escort a co-worker into the theater with cash, wait by the armored truck. But Jason was waiting. Dressed in a dark hoodie, gloves, and bike gear, he approached Keith from behind. Without warning, he fired 5 times, hitting Keith in the head and upper body. Witnesses described hearing the shots ring out in rapid succession, then seeing a man sprint away with a black duffel bag stuffed with roughly $56,000. Keith died on the scene, his body sprawled in a pool of blood behind the theater. The shooter fled down an alley on a bicycle, vanishing within minutes. It was a stunning, brutal, and coldly efficient crime. Phoenix police were baffled. No one had seen the suspect's face, but within 48 hours, a mountain bike was found dumped behind a nearby church, hidden beneath some shrubs. Investigators dusted it for prints and hit a match. Jason Derek Brown. His name triggered flags in multiple federal databases. A Glock 45 had been registered to him in Salt Lake. The gun matched the shell casings at the scene. He had just taken a firearms course. He had rented a storage unit in Phoenix just weeks before the murder, and most damning of all, he was already gone. By the time an arrest warrant was issued on December 6th, Jason had vanished. His Salt Lake City apartment was empty. His BMW was gone. Neighbors hadn't seen him in days. Authorities now had their suspect, but he had a week-long head start. And if Jason Derek Brown was anything, he was slippery. He had the looks, the money, and the charm to move through any city unnoticed. He spoke fluent French. He knew how to disappear. And the clock had just started ticking. What began as a local murder was about to become one of the most baffling international manhunts in modern FBI history. Chapter 2. Escalation. The Vanishing Act. The manhunt for Jason Derek Brown didn't start with sirens and street blockades. It began with silence. By the time authorities identified him as the primary suspect in the murder of armored guard Robert Keith Palomares, Jason had already melted into the shadows. No sightings, no known whereabouts, just the cold trail of a polished con artist who had been preparing to vanish long before he ever pulled the trigger. FBI agents were stunned by the audacity of it all. Jason had shot a man in broad daylight, stolen $56,000, and escaped not in a car, but on a bicycle. Witnesses described a clean-cut man in athletic gear sprinting to a mountain bike, zipping through alleys, and disappearing within seconds. The move was almost cinematic, but this wasn't fiction. In the days after the murder, the FBI tracked Jason's final known steps. Surveillance footage showed him making a purchase at a sporting goods store. His credit card was used at a gas station in southern Orange County. His sleek BMW M3 had been traded in for a Cadillac Escalade, likely to avoid license plate recognition. His cell phone went dark. He didn't board a flight. He didn't call anyone. He just disappeared. Investigators soon learned he had briefly stayed with relatives in Orange County, but when agents arrived at the home, he was already gone, slipping away just an hour before the FBI knocked on the door. The only clue he left behind was a box. It had been mailed from Salt Lake City to his brother David's home in San Diego. Inside were golf clubs, designer clothes, and camping gear, Jason's curated essentials. His brother later admitted to cleaning out Jason's apartment and vehicle. David Brown was indicted for obstruction of justice, but served probation after pleading guilty. As Jason's trail grew colder, the FBI raised the stakes. He was charged with first-degree murder, armed robbery, and unlawful flight to avoid prosecution. In 2007, Jason Derek Brown was officially added to the FBI's 10 Most Wanted Fugitives list. A $200,000 reward was posted for information leading to his arrest. Posters with his face were plastered in airports, post offices, and border crossings across the country. But Jason wasn't just gone, he was ghosting the entire system. The public fascination exploded. How could someone like him, a suburban guy with no known ties to organized crime, evade capture so flawlessly? Tips began to pour in. Sightings came from Las Vegas, Salt Lake City, even Canada and Europe. One particularly credible lead came in 2008 in Salt Lake City. A witness reported seeing Jason driving a black BMW near the Hogle Zoo. The man matched Jason's description exactly: blonde, athletic, wearing sunglasses and a hoodie. The witness contacted the FBI and even followed the suspect briefly, but Jason realized he was being tailed and quickly sped away. That was the last known possible sighting. Theories about his whereabouts began to flourish. Some believed he had slipped into Canada through remote forest crossings in the Pacific Northwest. Others suspected he had fled to Europe, possibly France, where he could use his fluency in the language and blend in seamlessly. A few investigators believed Jason never left the United States, that he was hiding in plain sight, using fake IDs and the kindness of friends or church contacts who either didn't know his secret or didn't care. His Mormon background complicated matters. Many speculated that Jason could have tapped into underground networks of faith-based communities. Mormon missions had taken him across the world, France, Switzerland, Quebec. The idea that he might be living quietly among a trusting religious group wasn't outlandish. But investigators also knew Jason wasn't a simple fugitive. He was a narcissist. He loved money, status, and women. He wasn't likely to live the rest of his life in a shack in the woods or a monastery in the Alps. So how did he survive? Credit card fraud, identity theft, and petty scams were likely. He had a long history of financial deceit. Former associates recalled how he'd forge bank statements, impersonate loan officers, and fake tax documents just to keep up appearances. Jason could walk into a bank with a smile and a story, one old friend said, and walk out with 20 grand that didn't belong to him. In the years following the murder, the FBI made repeated efforts to smoke him out. Undercover agents posted online, tapped old phones, and monitored anyone even remotely connected to him. But Jason never reached out. No phone calls, no emails, no social media slips. By 2010, the trail had gone cold. Jason Derrick Brown became an urban legend of sorts. True crime forums speculated endlessly. Was he working as a ski instructor in the French Alps? Running a surf shop in Thailand? Living off-grid in rural Utah with a new identity? Or had he killed himself somewhere remote? His body never found. But one thing continued to haunt law enforcement: his confidence. Jason was a man who believed he was smarter than everyone else in the room, and that belief, that ego, often breeds recklessness. That recklessness came full circle when Hollywood came knocking. In 2022, nearly 18 years after the murder, the story of Jason Derrick Brown hit the big screen. American Murderer, a gritty true crime drama starring Tom Pelfrey as Jason, reignited public interest. The film didn't just chronicle his life and alleged crimes. It captured the seductive danger he embodied, the blend of charm and cold-blooded violence. For a new generation, he became a myth, a monster, and a mystery all over again. FBI agents were hopeful. The film, they believed, might trigger someone's memory or Jason's ego. A social media post, a comment, a face in a crowd. But once again, silence. Then came the twist no one expected. On September 7, 2022, the FBI quietly removed Jason Derrick Brown from the 10 most wanted fugitives list. Not because he was caught, not because he was dead, but because, after 18 years, priorities had shifted. The space on the list was needed for newer threats. Jason had simply aged out of the limelight. But for the family of Robert Keith Palomares, justice still hadn't come. A young father had been executed in broad daylight, and the man believed responsible had vanished into history. And yet, the question still lingers like smoke in a locked room. Where is Jason Derrick Brown? Chapter 3. Climax. A Face in the Crowd. The most haunting part of the Jason Derrick Brown case isn't the crime. It's the silence that followed. 18 years. No arrests. No confirmed sightings. No bodies. Just a name, Jason Derrick Brown, etched into America's most elusive manhunt, and a grieving family left to wonder if justice will ever catch up with the man accused of killing their son, brother, and father in cold blood. As 2023 turned into 2024, law enforcement quietly acknowledged the case was no longer active in the same way it once was. Leads had dried up. The tip line remained open, but with Jason no longer on the FBI's 10 most wanted fugitives list, momentum had faded. Some agents had retired, others were reassigned, and Jason, if still alive, had succeeded at the one thing few fugitives ever do. He had made the world forget, or at least most of it, because not everyone moved on. A small but relentless online community kept the story alive. Reddit forums, YouTube rabbit holes, amateur sleuth podcasts. They dug into every shred of rumor. Some analyzed photos from beach resorts in Thailand. Others claimed he was spotted teaching English in southern France. A few insisted he was hiding in Utah, living under a new name, in a remote Mormon enclave where no one asked questions. In one widely shared theory, Jason was said to have undergone plastic surgery in Mexico in the early 2010s. The user posted a blurry photo, taken in Baja California, of a man with similar features and a suspicious American accent. The FBI never confirmed the tip, but it ignited a new wave of curiosity. More questions emerged. Did Jason have help? Was there a larger network shielding him from justice? Some speculated his brother David, despite his prior conviction, knew more than he admitted. Others looked at Jason's ties to LDS communities in Arizona, Utah, and even Quebec, wondering if his charm and religious fluency allowed him to slip into closed-off communities that valued privacy over probing questions. But the most compelling mystery wasn't where he was hiding, it was who he had become. Jason Derek Brown wasn't a killer in the traditional sense. He wasn't a serial predator or a gangster. He was, at his core, a narcissist, a grifter who lived to be adored, envied, and admired. For someone like that, hiding in the shadows is psychological torture. The fame that once propelled him to the FBI's 10 most wanted list, the infamy that led to a Hollywood film about his life, was likely irresistible. So where was the crack in the armor? In 2022, American Murderer premiered, casting Tom Pelfrey as Jason in a stylized, gritty portrayal of his rise and alleged fall. Director Matthew Gentile, who had followed the case for years, hoped the film would provoke renewed interest and perhaps even flush Jason out. It didn't. But the impact was felt elsewhere. Searches for Jason's name skyrocketed. His FBI poster, still active though downgraded, was shared thousands of times. Former friends came forward with old stories. A bartender from Las Vegas claimed he once served Jason in 2006, quiet and bearded. A missionary in Marseille said she met a man who spoke perfect French and claimed to be from Salt Lake, but traveling indefinitely. None of these tips panned out. But the scent, long dormant, was in the air again. Even more intriguing was a tip received by a private investigator working outside official channels. In early 2024, a caller from Boise, Idaho reported a friendly, tan, 50-something man who taught spin classes and spoke fluent French. The man went by Jay. He drove a used Audi, lived modestly, and claimed to have lived all over. When shown Jason's photo, the caller hesitated and said, "He could be the guy, but older." The PI investigated, but the man vanished 2 weeks later. Lease expired. Cell number deactivated. No forwarding address. Once again, Jason slipped through the cracks. The bigger question remained, why did he kill? Was it pure greed? Desperation? A calculated heartless crime to erase debt and start over? To law enforcement, the answer was painfully simple. Jason wanted money, fast, and believed he could outsmart everyone. That belief, so deeply rooted in ego and arrogance, was what made him both dangerous and predictable. And it's what gives authorities hope. Because people like Jason don't change. They adapt, they hide. But eventually, they come back into the light. They need the attention. They crave the game. One mistake, one overstep. That's all it takes. Until then, his story remains suspended in mystery, a stain on the American justice system, and a source of endless grief for the Palomares family. Keith's mother still refuses to speak to the press. His siblings, now grown with families of their own, quietly honor his memory on the day he was killed, November 29th. One family lost a son that day, another created a fugitive legend, and the rest of us? We're left to wonder if the man sitting next to us in line at the bank, or sipping espresso at a cafe in Nice, or walking a dog in Boise, is really just Jay from California, or a cold-blooded killer who thinks he got away with it. So look closely. The next face you pass in the crowd could be the most wanted man you've never recognized, because Jason Derek Brown isn't just a fugitive, he's a ghost in plain sight.